begin the current daven, it's Kedushin Daf Chav Dalet. Begin on the bottom line of Chav Gimel and Beis, where the Gemara continues the discussion with the previous daf. That is, our Gemara was explaining the halach of our Mishnah regarding Eved Kanani, that he could reacquire himself back from Abdus, meaning to be a free man, and the Mishnah discussed two ways. One is regarding Shtar, and where the Machlik is regarding who can receive that Shtar from the master, and regarding Kesef, which the Gemara had qualified as a Machlik as Remeir and the Chachamim, regarding if only others could directly redeem him from the master, or could even redeem himself. Now, although generally the slave has no money of his own, the disagreement was that the Chachamim hold that other people could acquire something to the Eved specifically for that purpose, or in general situations when they acquired him, it could be just for him, and then he can use it to redeem himself. Whereas Reb Meir said that no, it's impossible. Whenever an Eved acquires something, it automatically goes to the master, and there's no feasibility of that situation. It has to be only Adi Acherim, not through the Eved himself. That was the Machlikas Reb Meir and the Chacham. And that the Gemara continues and says, V'ramid Reb Meir der Meir. We have seemingly a contradiction in the opinions of Reb Meir, and V'ramid Rabbanan der Rabbanan, and we have a contradiction in the opinion of the Rabbanan. The Tanya, like learning the following Braisa, as we continue the topic of Dalam and Aleph, the Braisa says the following Machlikas. Ein isha paid the meiser sheni. A woman is not allowed to redeem meiser sheni, where there's different halachas of trumas and meisers. When the person has a crop, there's truma, 1/50 approximately goes to the kohen, 1/10 is meiser rishon goes to the levi. Then meiser sheni in the first and second and the fourth and fifth years of the shemitah cycle, the person takes a second tithe and has to consume those produce in Yerushalayim. Let's say you don't want to bring that all up to Yerushalayim. What you do is, you redeem it, you deconsecrate it onto monies worth the value of that produce. The produce you could keep here, and the monies you take up to Yerushalayim, and you consume it in food over there. Now, generally there's halacha, if the owner redeems his Meister Sheni, he has to add a fifth. If someone else redeems his Meister Sheni, he does not have to add a fifth. That say the Chachamim, that a woman cannot redeem Meister Sheni, beloy chaymish, without a fifth. Now, the assumption of the Gemara originally is that we're talking about Meister Sheni from her husband's field, which she, according to this opinion, is seemingly like her husband, and therefore it qualifies what the Pasuk says, when someone redeems me Maisroi from his Maiser, he has to add on a fifth, as the Gemara will explain. So therefore, the opinion of the Chacham seemingly is that a woman cannot redeem it without a fifth. She's just like her husband, and therefore she has to add a fifth. However, Reb Shimon ben Loza, Oimim Mishum Reb Meir, he says, Nima of Reb Meir, Isha paid the Maiser Sheini B'loi Chaymish. No, a woman, a wife, could redeem Meister Sheni without adding a fifth. And the reason being is because it's not hers, it's her husband's. And therefore she doesn't have to add a fifth when she redeems the Meister and the Hekdish, because that halacha of adding a fifth on Meister Sheni and on Hekdish is only when the owners do it. That's their machlekes. So the Gemara first explains, hey chidami, what is the case they're discussing? And that is, ilei mebezuzi debalu Meister debal, if it would be her husband's money and her husband's field, and she's taking that money and redeeming the Meister Sheni, well then Shlichusa de Balka Avda. Then she's obviously the agent of her husband, because it's not her money, it's not her field, it's all her husband's. So then the question is, well, how would we understand the opinion of Reb Meir, who holds that you could redeem it without a chaimish? How could you redeem it without a chaimish? Even there, Reb Meir should have to agree that of course you have to add a fifth, because she's just an extension of her husband. So the Elo, rather, the case must be talked about. Bezuzi dida. It's actually her money. Now, how does a woman have money? Isn't kol masha kana isha kana baila? But there is what's called nichsi miluk, certain properties that are hers. The husband has the utility of them or the payers of them, but the actual properties are hers. So she has certain monies that she had coming into this relationship, which are her monies. So it's her money, umaiser dida, and it's her husband's maiser, meaning it's from his fields. Now, the pasuk tells us that ish, a man mi maisroi, Rahman, the Torah tells us, a man has to go ahead and redeem his maiser, he has to add a fifth, v'lo isha, however it says a man, not a woman, because when a woman is redeeming the maiser sheni of her husband, the pasuk tells us that she's considered like an achar, like someone else. So then we're really back to the question. So why would it be that you would require a chaimish, according to the opinion that says she needs a chaimish? Why would she need a chaimish? If that's the case, that it's her own monies and her husband's field, the Torah tells us that ish, and not isha, meaning the woman by her husband's field does not have to add a fifth, and it's her own monies. So she's not an extension of the husband. So elalav kiyai gavna. So the Gemara says, what we have to say, and this is going to lead us to the question of the contradiction, is it must be told in the following type of a case. The akni la achar mana. Because again, if it's her husband's money, for sure you got to get a fifth. If it's not her husband's money, for sure she doesn't have to get a fifth. So rather, it must be told about when someone else acquires a mana to this woman, Vamalani tells her, Amanasha tifti boyasa maiser, on the condition, I'm giving you this money, that you use it to redeem your husband's maiser sheni. Which, in other words, this person is telling her that I want you to be considered like someone else, because I don't want it to be whatever you acquire is your husband's, because if that happens, automatically, it would be chayav in the chaimish. So he's saying, look, I'm giving it to you only that you could use it to redeem it without adding a fifth. So the Rabbanan hold that when this other person tells her acquire this money, automatically her husband has acquired that money. And although he said amanas, as we learned Reb Meir's opinion in the previous daf, it doesn't help anything because it already was the husband's before you said the word amanas. So therefore the money is also the husband's. And therefore it's the husband's field and the husband's money. So essentially she's just doing his shlichus and it's considered ishmi maestro. It's like when the man takes and redeems his maestro, he has to add on a fifth. That's the opinion of the Rabbanan, seemingly, who say that a woman cannot redeem the maaser sheni without a fifth. Whereas Reb Meir holds that, no, that for her, for this woman, when this man gave this woman the money, it wasn't for her, it was only for the purpose of redeeming the maaser sheni without adding a fifth, which is to make her like someone else, to redeem without a fifth, and therefore Reb Meir holds that she could go ahead and redeem without a fifth, because there it will be excluded from the halacha of kamasha kana isha kana baila. Says the Gemara of Ibcha Shemanahu, this is the exact opposite of their opinions attributed to the Machlekes in our Mishnah regarding could other people give the slave money to redeem himself? Where the Remeir says, clearly not. There's no way to give the slave money, it has to be from other people directly. Whereas here he says clearly that the woman, and we said the conceptualization of this case has to be told on this way, where someone else gave her the money and she could use it to redeem without adding a fifth because it's not considered the husband's money. Whereas Rabbanan said that other people could give the slave the money and for the purpose of redeeming himself. Yet here we see clearly that they cannot give the woman money that should be considered her own money and not the husband's money, because we see that they say she has to add a fifth. So that contradicts their opinions in the way we interpreted them in the Mishnah. So Abaye says you gotta switch around the attributions in this brisa, and it's actually Reb Meir who says that you need to add the fifth. And the Sacham who say that you don't have to add the fifth. Rava gives a different approach. He says, La'ilam lo'y tepech. He says, no, you don't have to switch around the attributions. Why? Because v'hacha b'maisa da'asa mebeinasha askin. He says, I could conceptualize this halacha, this brisa, in a different case, not to be the same type of a case as the halacha of the Mishnah. That would explain why Reb Meir and the Chacham have different opinions regarding this brisa. Because here we're talking about where she inherited this field from her father, meaning her father died, and he had Meister Shani produce, which he inherited with all the other properties from her departed father. Now, since this is what's called Yerusha Habola Acher Mikan, it's inheritance she got after she was already married, the halacha is that they all have the halachic status as Nichsi Milug. Nichsi Milug is certain properties, in contrast to Nichsi Tzern Barzel, where what you do with those assets is you sell it, you buy land with that, and the land is hers, but the husband eats the produce. That's the halachic status of lands that she would inherit, or produce, or things that she inherits from her father, that you go ahead, you sell it, you buy land with it, and the land is hers, but the produce is eaten by the husband. Now we can understand the machlekes Reb Meir and the Chachamim in this brisa, and it's not related to the Mishnah. For Meir l'tamei, Reb Meir is going according to his opinion, the Amar that he says later on in the second parak, Meiser Mammon Hektish, who Meiser Sheni, Meiser, has a luchic status as Hektish. Which means to say that although you eat the Meiser Sheni, it doesn't go on the base on the Mizbeach, but you're eating from, so to speak, Mishulchan Gavaya, from Hashem's table. Now, therefore, it's not like other assets, which the Takana Drabbanan was that the husband goes and eats the payrus from his wife's Nechsimelug, because it's not his wife's property, it's Hektish's property. You, whoever the owner is, just gets the rights to eat it, but it's not owned by the woman, and therefore v'lekani lebal. Therefore, it may hold that when they go ahead, and she gets this meiser sheni, that meiser sheni is not hers to say that the husband inherits it. So hence, when she uses her husband's money to redeem this meiser sheni, it's not his meiser sheni, because the money is his. She's getting money from her husband. She doesn't have her own money. but the Meiser is actually hers or Hashem's Hekdesh. That's why he says that you can be exempt from the Chaimish, because it's not using the owner's money to redeem his Meiser Sheni. Because again, Meiser Sheni is not going to be given to the husband, because it's only when it's her properties that she's inheriting from her father, then he gets the Peiros, which this is Peiros. And then it would be using his money to redeem his Meiser Sheni. But since Meiser Sheni is Mamon Hekdesh, it's not hers for him to inherit it. So that's where Meir holds that you don't have to add the Chaimish. But Rabban Tamei, the Rabban who disagree, they go according to their opinion, the army that they say Mamon Hekdesh. They say that actually Meiser Sheni is considered the person's ownership. They own it. Therefore, since the woman owns the Meiser Sheni that she's inheriting from her father, so there it would apply the halachic, the Rabbanan's takana of Nichsei Milug, and hence Vekani Leibal. So therefore, these Peiros, the husband inherits just like other Nichsei Milug. Now, so since the Peiros are considered the husband's, because whatever the woman gets, if it's Nichsei Milug, the Peiros go to the husband, and since the woman's using her husband's money to redeem this Meiser Sheni, so Hilkech Shlichus the Baal Kavda, so therefore, essentially, it's like when you have, as the case we discussed before, that everyone agrees to, when it's the husband's produce and it's the husband's money, and even if the woman's doing it, she's just acting as an agent for her husband, and that's why the Chacham say you have to add a fifth. And therefore, it's unrelated. We thought it was going to be a contradiction to the previous discussion, because we thought the only way we could describe this is when someone else is being makna tahar for the purpose of redeeming without it being the husband's to not have to add a fifth. That would have been a contradiction. But on that, Rava said, either Abaye said, okay, you have to switch around the attributions. So Rava said it's a whole different case, and it's related to a different machlokes regarding the halachic status of Meiser Sheni. Is it like Hekdesh, which is what Meir holds, and therefore the husband does not inherit it, and therefore it's his money but not his peiros? Or is it like the Chacham hold that it is considered Mamon Hekdesh, and therefore the husband does inherit it, and therefore the woman is using the husband's money to redeem his peiros, and therefore you have to add a Chaimish? Now the Gemara continues related to the halacha of our Mishnah that it mentioned two ways that the Eved could buy himself back. One is through a shtar and one is through money. So Tanu learned the Braisa that there's another way that it goes out, which is mentioned in the Torah, of Yitzah B'Shem Ayin. He goes out if the owner knocks out his eye or blinds his eye or knocks out his tooth, or V'Rashi Yavam, or any, which there are 24 of them, tips of limbs, which is Torah Masechet Nagoyim in the 6th Perek, and actually the Gemara later on, the Chofeim and Aleph brings them, She'enim Chazrim, if they don't come back, in other words, if they're taken away like the tooth and the eye, which we learn from Imam Atzinu later on, though so too, if any of these things are damaged by the owner, the slave goes free that way. So the Gemara inquires regarding this halacha. Bishlem Shin V'Ayin Ksivu, understand, the tooth and the eye is written in the Torah where it talks about that if the master knocks that out, the slave is going free. But where do we know the same halacha applies to the 24 tips of limbs? If those are severed, that the Eved is going to go free. So the Gemara says, Dumi de Shema Ayin. We learn that from what's called a Mamatzinu. Just like we find similar to the characteristic of what the Torah tells us regarding the tooth and the eye. Mashin ba'ayin, just like regarding the tooth and the eye. Mumin shebegaloi. Those are blemishes that are revealed. You see when someone's missing an eye and a tooth. Ve'ein achayis, and then when they're damaged, they don't come back. In contrast to when you get a cut, your skin regrows. Av kol mumin shebegolov ein lechayzin. So too, any revealed blemish, which are these 24 tips of the limbs, and they don't come back, they're also going to allow this slave to go free. Now, that the Gemara asks, however, ve'eimen ahav hashem ba'ayin kishnei kesuv ma'boim ke'achad. Actually, we should say that since it says not just one example, but two examples of when the slave goes free, and since they're essentially saying the same halacha, they should be like two psukim that are coming to say the same concept. And the halacha is when you have two psukim saying the same concept, actually the halacha is ein melamdim. You don't learn from there to compare to other halachas that are similar. Because from the fact that it didn't say one, why not? Why just say one example and you wouldn't learn out the other one and everything else from there? Why do you say two? To say, oh, it only applies in this circumstance and you cannot compare. That's why you have to say another similar type of halacha and you couldn't learn it out from the other one. So then why are we learning out the chavtal rashi avarim from shen and ayin? So the Gemara says, no, tzricha. Actually, you need it. You would not be able to know Shen from Ayin or Ayin from Shen, and therefore, they're not considered Boin Ke'echad, because they're teaching different things. And therefore, since they were necessary to say, we could still say we learn out everything else that's similar to Shem Ayin. Why? Dikas Rachman HaShein, had the Torah only written that if his tooth gets knocked out, he goes free, Havimina, I would have thought to say that Afila, that even as we continue on Tamad Beis, Shen the Chalav, even if his milk tooth, meaning the tooth that he nurses with as a baby, his baby teeth, which even if it gets knocked out, they're going to end up coming back. So for example, by a minor slave, I would have thought that he goes free with that, Kaz Rachman Ayin. That's what Torah has to tell you, the eye, where it doesn't come back. Because Rachman Ayin, had we only said the eye, Havamina ma ayin shenivri imai, I would have thought only with the eye, because he's born with the eye, Av kol shenivri imai, also anything that he's born with, that gets knocked out, then he goes free. Avo shen loy, but regarding the tooth, that wouldn't free him. So tzricha, that's why you have to say the halacha regarding tooth. One, again, halacha teaches us that it only applies to adult teeth, not the baby teeth. And one tells us that in general, that it will work with teeth, even though he wasn't born with that. But the Gemara asks a different question. The aim of what we should say, when it says in the Torah, kiyaka, that when the master will hit and damage his slave, well, that's a claw, that's a general statement. It sounds like any type of hitting. Shen the eye, when then it mentions regarding the tooth and the eye, that's a prat, that's a specific what type of damage. Klal prat, the halacha is when you have a general statement and the specific, ein b'chlal ela masha b'prat, then whatever is in the category, the general category, could only be what's in the specific, which is shen v'ayin in, that only the tooth and the eye should allow him to go free. Midachrin eloi, nothing else. So how could we learn in the comparison of shen v'ayin in its characteristics, so too for all the other chavtal rashi varam, but seemingly this is a klal prat, and a klal prat only lets you learn what's exactly, what is only the prat itself. So that the Gemara answers, it says in the pasuk, l'chofshi yishalchenu. For freedom, he will send him. Now, yishalchenu, he will send him, sounds like that there's many different sendings that are being included over here. Why? As Rashi says, because it could have just said, l'chofshi hu, or chofshi hu, he's free. Or yotzeh chofshi, goes out free. What's yishalchenu? To add on different types of things that send him away, which chazav akal, it goes back and it says another general rule, meaning he sends him away for any type of damage. So now you have a klal or prat or klal. You have a general statement, a specific, and a general. So now you could only qualify what's similar to the specific. Ma haprat mefurish mum shebegolov in a chayzim. Again, not like we said on Amud Aleph regarding a mamatzin. This is learning out from a klal prat a klal, but it's teaching us the same halacha, which is just like the specific is a revealed blemish and it doesn't come back. I'll call mum shebegolov in a chayzim. So too, anything that's a revealed blemish and doesn't come back, which includes the chavtal rashivar. Now, however, the Gemara asks on this interpretation too. Ima haprat mefurish, if you're going to learn from the specific, which is explicit that it's mumit shebegoloi, you're right on that point, it's a revealed blemish, but it has another quality. Ubaltel mimalachtoi, now he can't do his work, because now he's blinded from seeing, and his teeth are knocked out from chewing. And the enochaita doesn't come back. So af kol, so then I should tell you that also, yeah, what you could learn out, not just two variables, but three variables. It has to be mumin shebegoloi, revealed blemish. Ve'enu chayz, it doesn't come back. Ubatel mimalachtoi, and it should have the same characteristic as the prat. If that's how you're learning from a klal prat to klal, has to be exactly like the prat, which it would interfere with the eved's work. Only then it goes free. Now the difficulty is, Allah matanya, why do we learn the braisa? Talish bizakanai. If the master pulls and yanks on the beard of the slave, v'dildel boy etzim, and he dislocates a bone in the chin of the slave, which is still attached because the flesh is around it, says the Braisa, Eved Yetzer Behem L'Cheiris. That will also allow the slave to go free. Now, as Rashi explains, if it's a type of a bone which doesn't come back, and it will end up drying up and falling out. Now, although that would obviously not interfere with his work, because what does the bone in his by his beard have anything to do with his work? Now, but since it's a revealed blemish and it doesn't come back, so it's like one of the 24 tips of the limbs, which it frees the Eved. Now the problem is, if you're learning from a klal prat to klal, it's missing one variable. It's not batel mimalachtoi. So why would that free him if that's the source of the halacha? So that the Gemara says, you're right, it's not from a klal prat to klal that we know this. L'chavshi yishalchenu, when it said that he goes, that we for freedom he gets sent away, it's not a chaz of a kol, as we said before, rather ribuyuhu. That's not a general statement. It doesn't tell you any type of hitting. It's just saying we send him away. But that's not a klal in regards to what type of damages. It's just an inclusive terminology that there are more things that we send them away for. So therefore, we're not going to qualify it now as a klal prat uklal. Rather, we're going to qualify it as a ribui, miut, and ribui. Where that halacha changes, although it sounds the same, but that, according to that interpretation, the ribui actually includes everything. So the Gemara asks, v'i ribui yuhui, but then if you're saying l'chavshi yishalchenu is inclusive terminology and includes basically everything, Then even if the master just hits the hand of the slave and it dries up, but it'll end up getting healed, nami, that should also be included in whatever type of damages he should get freed. Alamatanya, then why do we learn the braisa? He call yada bitsamsa, that if he hits him on the hand and it dries up, but end up getting healed, ain ever yaitzabalacharis, the slave does not go free. Why not? The rebuy should include everything. To which the Gemara answers, M. Cain, if we're not going to be excluding anything, then Shin V'ayin Mayahanile, then what is the miyut of Shin V'ayin, what is that coming to exclude? It has to exclude something. Because Rebuy, Miyut, Rebuy includes everything but something. Something has to be excluded from the miyut of Shin V'ayin, which tells us that just like Shin V'ayin is something that is Bugoloi, and it's Ein Chayzer, it's including something that is Chayzer, like the case of Tzamsi Yadai, B'Seif Alachzer, where that's not enough of a damage. That's what's being excluded from the halacha of being freed. And therefore, that's what the Gemara's source for it is, from a ribuy, meet and ribuy. That's how we know that things that share the two characteristics of the halacha of Shem V'ayin, which are the Chavtel Roshei Varm, those are the things that free an Ebed. So, Tanya Rabban, we learned the Braisa. Bekulam, regarding all these tips of the limbs, these Roshei Varm, Eved Yetzibem Lecheres, as we said before, not just Shem V'ayin, but also these 24 different areas will free the slave if he gets damaged. But v'tzarch get shichur, he requires a document of emancipation to permit him to marry a Jewish woman, meaning although monetarily he's free, but regarding prohibitory law, he has to be freed officially from the master with a get shichur to permit him to marry a Jewish woman. That's the Reb Shimon. He disagrees. He says, no, ein etzarch, you don't need. Reb Loza, I'm etzarch, you do need. Reb Tavon, I'm ein etzarch, you don't need. Reb Kiva, I'm etzarch. Reb Kiva says, you do need. However, hamachrim lofnei chachamim, those who decided that they would weigh the halacha in front of the sages, they said as follows, somewhere in the middle, nirin divri Reb Tarfon b'shem v'ayin, it would seem like Reb Tarfon, regarding when it's his tooth and his eye, then you don't need to get shechur. And the reason being is shatara zachsele, because the Torah explicitly says that he merits freedom when his tooth and his eye get knocked out. So there you don't need to get shechur. But v'divri Reb Akiva b'shar v'am, however, it would seem the opinion of the Reb Akiva that you do need to get shechur in regards to the other limbs. And the reason is hoyav knas chacham hu, since it's just a penalty of the sages, although he goes free, but he would require a get shechur. Tosh Gemara asks, knasu? What do you mean? It's a rabbinic penalty that frees him by the chavdal rosh evarim? What do you mean? Kuroi kadeshin. We just expounded psukim of ribui, miut, and ribui that includes the rosh evarim. It's a biblical law. Why there would you require a get shechur? So, rather, the Gemara says, it doesn't mean it's knas chachamim, rather hoyal umedrish chacham hu. Since it's rabbinically expounded in the Torah, it's not explicit, that's why over there you would require a get shechur in contrast to Shem V'ayin. Which Taisa asks, why does that make a difference if it's a Medrash Chachamim? There are many basic core halachas that are biblical that we only know from a drasha. So why would that make it different than Shem V'ayin to require a get shechur? So Taisa actually brings two interpretations. One's from Rabbeinu Tam that he says, you're right. Of course, biblically, you wouldn't require a get shichur by the Rosh Evarim, just like Shem V'ayin, but it's rabbinic, because we're concerned that the master might end up meeting his slave years later when he already has a whole Jewish family in the marketplace, and he's going to say, you're my slave. And that's going to cause problems, because they can say he's a slave, his children are not full-fledged Jews, and so on and so forth. Now, the reason why in those cases he'll say, you're my slave, in contrast to Shem V'ayin, is because not everybody knows. They only know what it says in the Chumash. They don't know this drasha that applies to Chavdal Rosh Evarim. And that's why they rabbinically instituted a get shechur, so that everyone knows he was emancipated. The Riva explains, he says that most definitely, by Shem V'ayin, which is written in the Pasuk. Now, what's the significance of that? So regarding them, and we'll see this as the Gemara moves on, it says in the Pasuk, L'chafshi yishalchenu, which sounds like, chafshi sounds like mi'ikara, that he was free before he was even sent away. So in regards to Shem V'ayin, which the Pasuk is going on those words, L'chafshi yishalchenu, it's obvious that we would not learn out, as the other opinions do say, shiluach from Isha, which that's where we would learn out that you need to get shechur, because you're not learning out that you're sent away from a woman. It's because the Pasuk says explicitly you go free, so therefore you wouldn't require get shechur. But regarding the other limbs, where we don't know it from the Pasuk itself, we only know it from the extra word Yishalchenu, so that word Yishalchenu, we would learn out the word Shiluach, which it says over here Yishalchenu, which is the source of the limud of the other limbs, from a woman where it says that she's sent away, which just like over there you require a get, so too over here you would require a get shechar. Those are two different interpretations of Taisus. What would be the significance that it's a medshech chachamim according to these who have this intermediate opinion where regarding Shem Ba'ayin you don't require a get shechar, but regarding Sharavam you do require a get shechar. But now the Gemara explains, my time with Rabbi Shimon, what's the reason of Rabbi Shimon that he does require a get shechar? So now he explains, as we just mentioned this, Yalav shiluach shiluach mi'isha, he learns out where it says, lachavshi yishalcheno by the Eved, and it says shiluach by a woman. Ma'isha b'shtar, just like when the woman is sent away to freedom, to herself, it's with a document, a get. Af Eved nam b'shtar, so to an Eved has to be with a shtar, with a get shechar, even though he was had his tooth or his eye knocked out. Now, however, a mayor, he would say that you're right. If it would say Yishalchenu lachavshi, let's say, where chavshi is at the end of the sentence, then it would sound like that, yeah, so his freedom could only be when you first have shiluach, if the word shiluach would be first, that you need to have get, and then he gets freed. But hashtu dechsiv lachavshi yishalchenu, but now that it says first, to freedom, and then you send them away, havalei chavshi meikara, that tells us that the freedom was first. And then, so what does Yishalchenu come to teach us? That comes to teach us regarding the other limbs. And they're also, according to that opinion, it's also going to be lachavshi without a get shechar. And therefore, you're not going to learn that out from Yishalchen shiluach shiluach from Isha. So you have these three different opinions how to learn up this halacha, where one says you always need to get shechar, and the reason is because you learn that out shiluach shiluach from Isha. Another one says you never need to get shechar, because you have chavshi before it says Yishalchenu. So we see freedom comes without that. You don't need shalchenu, and rather it's coming to teach you the halacha of Rashi Yevarim, which is also, according to that opinion, going to be without a get shechar. And then you have that intermediate opinion where we said, at least according to one interpretation of Tosfos, is because Yishalchenu, which is the source for other Yevarim, there you'll learn Shiluach Shiluach. But regarding Shem Va'ayin, where you have Chavshi beforehand, which that's what the Pasuk is going on, Shem Va'ayin, they would not require a get shechar. Continuing on these halachas, the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, we'll learn the Braisa. Hiko al enoy b'sema. If the owner hits his slave in the eye and it blinds him, or al azne b'charsha, or he knocks him in the ear and he makes him deaf, so eved yetz ben lecheres, so then he goes free. And that's because it's from the Rosh Yevar. Keneged enoy. Let's say he doesn't knock him in the eye, but right next to his eye, he bangs on the wall and that reverberations, that noise blinds him. V'ein eroy, now you can't see anymore. Or keneged azne b'ein shemayim, knocks him right near the ear and it's such a noise, and that trauma, now he can't hear anymore. There, in Eved Yetzer Ben Lecheres, there, the slave does not go free, because although he maybe caused it, but he didn't knock him in the ear, he didn't knock him in the eye, in the tooth, so he's not going to go free, although the damages happened to the slave. Now, on this halacha, the Gemara asks, Rav Shimon L'Ravashi, says, Lememer D'Kol Lav Klumu, is this to say that creating a noise that will cause a trauma, that will break something, that will harm something, that's nothing, that you're not liable for damages that way? But Vatani, Rami Bar Yechezkel, Rami Chizkel taught the following braisel. It says, Tarnagol, Shahishid Roshi La'arve Kleis Chuches, a rooster that sticks its head into the ear space of a glass vessel, Vatakabai Veshavar, and it makes its noises, and it breaks through its voice the glass vessel. Mishalam Nezek Shalom, the owner has to pay the full damages, which Rashi explains, that's going like Sumchis, which is brought in Mesechtes Baba Kama, who he says that even an animal, the damages in a not normative way, not through shen, not through its tooth or regal, rather when what's called tsroiris, when it kicks pebbles, pays nezik shalom. So that's why you pay the full damages. Similarly, Amar Rav Yisrael, Rav Yisrael said that Amar Bei Rav, they said in the Shiva of Rav, suf tzatzonaf, a horse that neighs, or a chamor shenor, or a donkey that brayed, v'shavar kelim, and then with its noise, it broke a vessel, b'teich abayis, in the house, Mishal Mechatzi Nezik, you pay half damages. Now, although before we said Nezik Shalom, that was like Sumchas, this is going like another opinion regarding Tzreiris, like the Rabbanu who disputes Sumchas and Baba Kama, and they say when it comes to these not normal type of damages, that you only have to pay Chatzi Nezik by Tzreiris, half of the damages. But one thing the Gemara is asking from is that you see that damages through the noises that they make, that there is a liability and it's considered a damage. So why over here when he makes the noise right next to his ear or his eye and it causes the damage, is not considered that he caused the damage to free the Eved through Rashi Yevarim. So Amalei, Rav Ashi answered to Rav Shemin, he says, Shani Adam, you're right, that's by vessels. But when you're damaging a person is different. And the Kivin de Bardasu, since he has his own intelligence, Ihu Mivis Nafshe, he actually caused the trauma to himself on some level. Meaning, with his intention, he gets afraid and his heart becomes aware and pays attention to the fear of the voice which suddenly came, and that's actually what caused the damage. So in a sense, yes, although the other person might have been a grama, a cause, but he didn't actually do it himself, it's the person that brings on the damages to himself. Ketan like in the Braisa. Hamavas says chaver, if someone frightens his friend, which causes his damages, he's exempt from liabilities in human courts, but although he has a responsibility, a liability at the hands of heaven, because ultimately he caused it. So what's the case, is the Braisa? If he blows right next to his ear and he causes him to become deaf, he's exempt, because it's the person himself who causes the damages to himself, although obviously that other person is doing something unfair and in heavens he's going to be liable for that. Now, however, achzuhu v'takaba aznai. However, if he grabs the guy and he grabs his ear and he blows into his ear, v'charsha, and then he makes him deaf, then he's chai, because then he did a physical act to the person, although it's the same act of blowing, but the fact that he grabs a hold of him, that's already causing it in a way of directive, and then you're going to be chai. Tanraban, another bryce, the Gemara continues on these halachas. Hiko al enoy v'kasa. If he knocks him in the eye, and he dims his vision, doesn't blind him totally, he could still see a little bit, but he dims his vision. Or ashine v'nada dor, he knocks him in the tooth, and it becomes shaky. So says the Braisa, im yachal l'shtamash ben achshav, if he could still utilize, he could still see a little bit, he could manage with his vision, he could still use his tooth, then ein eved yetze ben l'cher, so this slave doesn't go free. V'mla, but if he can't use it anymore, then eved yetze ben l'cher, then the slave goes free. Similarly, tan idir chulat, another Braisa. Let's say the Eved's vision was already dimmed, but it was still some vision left, and then he blinds him. Or shina neduda v'pila, or his tooth was shaky, and then the master knocks it out. So the Braisa says again, if up until now he was able to utilize that little vision, that little amount of the tooth, and now he can't use it at all, so then he's going to go free. Vimlav, but if up until now he really couldn't use that vision anyway, and he couldn't use the tooth, then in Eved Yetzer Ben L'Cheres, then he's not going to free. So the Gemara explains, if it's Tzricha, when he needed both of these brises to say that he goes free, to teach us that where he couldn't utilize it before now, even though now he's totally blind, that's going to be considered where it's considered a destruction. Now that the Gemara explains, if it's Tzricha, and we needed to have both of these brises to teach they're seemingly similar halachas, that he goes free, where one of them is teaching us that where he can't utilize that eye or that tooth anymore, even though he wasn't totally blinded, that would be considered, Hashcha says, we'll see that's the terminology of the pasuk, of his limb being destroyed. And so too, where if he totally blinded him, even though his vision was dimmed up until now, but since up until now he's able to utilize it, albeit with difficulty, that would also be considered now that he's totally blind as a hashchas, as a destruction, and therefore he goes free, as the Gemara explains. Because the Yashmin Hach Kamaisad, we only see the first Braisa. So, Mishum de Mikar in the Nahari Bari, I would have said, oh, because before his vision was totally regular, the Hash in the Nahari Krisha, now he dimmed it to a point where he can't even utilize it anymore. So, even though he's not totally blind, but for all practical purposes, he can't use it anymore, so that would free him. But here regarding the second Braisa, Dimikara Namin Harikrisha, where even before his vision was dimmed, now although he was able to utilize it, but Emaloi, I would say that that's not considered like an eye because it was totally dimmed, and even if he blinds him, he wouldn't go free. That's why I have to say that no, since he was able to use it, albeit with difficulty, now that he blinded him, there he also goes free. Now, so too the reverse. Viyash Minaha, had we only said the second Braisa, Mishum de Sami Lagamri, because there, okay, it was very difficult to see, but you're able to see a little bit, and now you totally blinded him. So then he goes free. Aval Hasam de Le Sami Lagamri Emaloi, but in the first Braisa, where although he had regular vision, and now you dimmed it to a point where he can't see anymore, but he's not totally blind, then I would say that he wouldn't go free. That's what we have. Both of these Braisa teach. In both of these cases, it's considered a Hashchasa, where either because now he can't see anymore, or where even up until now, he was barely able to see, but he totally blinded him. They're considered hashchasa to free the eved. Related discussion: the Gemara brings Tan Rabban, learned in a brisa. Hareish shahayu Rabbi Roife. If it was a case where the master was a doctor, now the slave told the master, I need an eye doctor. I need you to put in some drops to do some type of an operation in my eye to put in some of this salve. Now the doctor didn't do it, something happened, and he blinded the slave as he put the stuff in his eye. Or let's say lachtu leishina behipila. Let's say his master was a dentist. He asked him to dig around, to clean and to dig around the place of where the tooth is, and it caused the tooth to fall out. Says the Tanna Kama, sichik bi'adon bi'atzel acheres. So to speak, the slave could laugh his way to the bank. He could just laugh at the master and he goes free, because although the master is trying to help him, but you caused my eye to be blind, you caused the tooth to fall out, I go free. B'shimim Gamaliel Oymer, he disagrees. He says, the Pasuk says, v'shichasa, and where it talks about there in the Pasuk, in Shmais Chafal of Chavav, it says that if the master will hit the eye of the slave or the tooth, or the eye of the maidservant, it says, v'shichasa, and he'll destroy it. And then it says, okay, so then lachav shishachan, he'll go free tachas enai. And then B'shimim Gamaliel learns, achi yiskavan l'shachasa. It's only if his intention was, v'shichasa, that he came and he destroyed it, then he goes free. But if his intention was because he was trying to heal you because he's a doctor or a dentist, then that will not free him, even though he ends up blinding him or having his tooth fall out. Now the Gemara asked Rabban and Hai B'shichas Amai Abdile, what do they do with this? If they hold that no matter the situation that it falls out, he goes free. So what do we learn now from this term of B'shichas Sa, that he destroyed it? So now the Gemara says, Mibayu Lulik D'Tanya. They need it for a similar halacha, but only that's included, like we learned in the following Braisa. B'laza Aymer, he says, if the master was maybe was an OB, he was going to deliver the fetus, the baby of his maidservant. And in the process, he blinded the fetus, the baby in the mother's womb. Says Rabbi Elazar, Pata, he's going to be exempt. My time, what's the reason? You blinded the eye, and the eye is what frees. Because the Pasuk says that, and he came and he destroyed it, which is achichaven l'shichasa, until his intention is to destroy it. Now, we're there, that's where the Chacham would agree that he didn't intend for the eye at all. He was just trying to deliver the baby, and his eye went into the baby's eye and poked it. But regarding the case of when the slave tells the master, Koyli Eini, puts himself in my eye, where his intention was for the eye, there they hold that even though the intention was not for destruction, you're still going to be chayv, and that's going to free the slave. It's only when you didn't intend at all for the eye or the tooth, then if something happens, then he's going to be exempt. Now, v'idach, but Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, he would tell you, mevashiches, where if the pasuk just said v'shiches without the extra hey, so then from that I would have known Rabbi Elazar's halacha, which excludes if he didn't intend for shiches at all. But shichas sa nafka, but then you have the extra hey, which tells us that v'shichas sa, that he came to destroy this, which tells us that even though that where his intention, that it's coming to tell us that even though his intention was for this thing, but it has to be not just for this thing, but even for the destruction of this thing. And that's why Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel holds that in the case of the eye doctor or the dentist, then he's going to be exempt. Whereas v'idach, but the Rabbanan, shichas olay darsh, they don't expound this the word itself in extra hay, and therefore you have just one source. So the minimum amount, you learn that from that, is where he had no intention at all for destruction by delivering a baby, that's where you're exempt. But if you had intended for the eye or the tooth, even though you didn't mean to destroy it, then they hold you're going to be chayiv. In contrast, Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel holds that would also be excluded from b'shichis v'shichasa, that since your intention was not for destruction, you're going to be exempt. Continue on these halachas, Amar Rav Sheshes, he says, Harisha haise enoy semuya. If the slave's eye was already blind, but v'chatata, then the master poked it out. The eyeball fell out, although it was blind up until now. It says Rav Sheshes, Eved Yetzer Ben Lacheres, the slave is going to go free that way. Not my time, what's the reason? Because Mechuser Evehu, now he's lacking a limb. So although it was blind, but now that the limb fell out, that's also considered a blemish that's revealed and it's not coming back, and that will free him. B'tana Tuna, and we have a Braisa that supports this concept, where the Braisa says, Tamus V'Zachris Be'Behema, there's a halachic concept of requiring male and being unblemished by animals. Now, however, there is no such halacha regarding bird karbanas that it has to be unblemished and that it has to be male. Now, this halacha is learned out from the pasuk in Meyukachov Beis, which talks about all karbanas. It says, Ish ish mi beis Yisrael, any Jewish man that ashiyakov karbanah l'chol nedreim, that will bring his karban for any donation or obligatory karbanas, says, Lord Tzayinchem tomim zachar babakar, that it says, for your willingness, it should be unblemished, male from the cattle, from the flock, but b'ksavim u'be'izim, from the sheep and the goats, Now, the Gemara, the Braisa expounds elsewhere from the fact that it doesn't say, L'tzoynchem tomim zacher, and stop. Rather, it adds on, Beksavim uve'izim, that teaches you that the halach of tamimis and zacharis is only particular for these things which I mentioned, which are animals, in exclusion of bird. Bird karbanos do not have to be unblemished. Now, however, the Braisa continues, but you would think, to take it even further, yochel yivshagapa, you would think even if the bird's wings dry up, or niktaragla, or its foot gets chopped off, or nechta ta'ena, or if its eye pops out, which again, this is the primary point that Rav Sheshes is bringing, that we see, although it could be the bird's eye was blinded even before now, but the fact that it pops out will create a blemish, as we see. So you would think even that would not be a problem for a bird carbon. Tamalim and minhaif. That's what the Pasuk teaches you. If you bring a carbon from the birds, which is an exclusionary term, v'loy kalayif, and not all birds. So although it doesn't have to be unblemished, but it can be missing a full limb, which includes the eye. And therefore, that's Rav Sheshes halacha. Even if it was blind, just having the eye pop out is considered a mum, and that would free the eved. Now, Amr Abchir bar Ashi, Amr Rav, a similar halacha, he says, let's say the slave had, as we continue on top of Chofayim and Alf, Yeseris, an extra finger. Instead of five, he had six. V'chatcha, and the master cuts that finger off. Ever yetzer ben lecheris, that would also free the slave. Now, Amr Rav Huna explains, but v'hushin esperes al gavaya, that's only if it was counted on the hand, meaning it was in the same order as the other fingers, you had not just five, but you actually had six in the same row, that would be considered something from his hand, which would be one of the Rashi Avam, that would free him. But again, if the finger was coming out of somewhere out of nowhere, that wouldn't give the halacha status as a finger as the Rashi Avam to free the Eved for this halacha of Shem V'ayin.